All right, thank you, Kirk. All right, I have no disclosures. So I'm sure most of you know these numbers, but I just want to put them up in case anyone in here is not very familiar with foodborne illness. So you can see here the number of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths that result from foodborne illness every year. And it costs over an approximate $15 billion every year. So this is a widespread and expensive problem. The majority of outbreaks and investigated clusters happen within a single city, county, or state. So the most of the burden for investigating and responding to outbreaks falls on state and local health departments. As if the size and burden of foodborne illness wasn't enough of a challenge, the increasingly global and industrialized food system means that there are new and emerging pathogens, new contaminated food vehicles, and new routes of contamination. And additionally, improved surveillance and new laboratory methods means that there are an increasing number of outbreaks detected and investigated. This is happening at the same time that resources are decreasing, which negatively impacts the ability of health organizations to identify, respond to, and control foodborne outbreaks. This reduction in resources is especially strong at the state and local level. To have a strong foodborne disease program, there needs to be sufficient capacity in laboratory, epidemiology, and environmental health. To address these challenges and the gaps in the food safety capacity system, CDC developed an innovative program called Food Corps, which aims to provide targeted resources to state and local health departments for foodborne disease response. And Food Corps stands for Foodborne Disease Centers for Outbreak Response Enhancement. There are currently 10 food corps centers in the United States, and they cover approximately 18% of the U.S. population. Collaboration is one of the key parts of the food corps program. The centers collaborate with each other and within their centers to share tools, advice, and expertise. This collaboration allows centers to test innovative methods, share successful strategies, and to identify and document model practices. Food Corps builds laboratory epidemiology and environmental health capacity within the centers to improve their ability to detect more outbreaks, conduct more thorough investigations, control outbreaks faster with the idea of preventing more people from getting sick. Leveraging this capacity, centers are able to conduct better, faster, and more complete outbreak investigation and response activities. Laboratory surveillance activities include isolate and specimen submission to the public health laboratories, complete and timely subtyping, such as PFGE, and communication of lab findings to investigation partners. Epidemiologic activities include conducting coordinated and standardized investigations so that outbreaks are detected earlier, so that interviews can happen sooner to identify the information needed to identify food vehicles and inform tracebacks. Environmental health activities include conducting environmental health assessments to collect the data to participate in traceback efforts and to identify food vehicles and sources of contamination. Also, environmental health provide training to local specialists to standardize environmental health investigations. To demonstrate the impact of Food Corps' targeted resources, the centers report performance metrics twice a year. The centers use these metrics to document their successes and identify gaps in their systems and to set and meet goals. At CDC, we use these metrics to evaluate the implementation of the Food Corps program and to advocate for additional support. Food Corps centers have demonstrated that the targeted investments of Food Corps can improve the completeness and timeliness of outbreak response activities. They've strengthened their outbreak response programs to conduct better, faster, and more complete investigations. If you're interested, there is a complete list of the Food Corps metrics and the documentation of their intent and rationale on the Food Corps website. In year four, which is 2014 for Food Corps, the labs received nearly 10,000 Salmonella, S-Tec, and Listeria isolates and were notified of over 7,000 cases. The centers identified almost 2,000 clusters, including 1,000 norovirus investigations, and they completed almost 300 environmental health assessments. So now I'll highlight a few of the Food Corps metrics that we collect. At the end of year three, the average proportion of Salmonella, E. coli, and Listeria isolates with PFGE results increased to nearly 100%, while the number of days to complete PFGE decreased by 50%. And you'll notice in this graph that this trend doesn't continue from year 3 to year 4, and that's because we added 3 additional centers during that time. So their year 4 data represents a bit of a baseline for them. These were fairly highly performing states, but they didn't have time to implement any changes with the food core metrics at this point. And if I take this same graph and look at only the previously existing 7 sites, you'll see that the trend for improved timeliness and completeness continues in year 4. At the same time, centers, is that the graph I wanted? No, okay, I don't know that I put, I think I may have skipped a slide, but anyway, at the same time, the centers are attempting to interview almost every single case, and the proportion of case patients with an attempted interview has increased every year from baseline through year 4. And not only are they attempting more interviews, they're doing them faster. The median number of days to attempt a listeria interview has fallen from 7 days to less than 1 day since baseline. Food core centers have also increased the proportion of norovirus investigations with analytics studies, despite an increase in the number of investigations. Between year 3 and year 4, the average number of norovirus investigations per food core center increased from 37 to 92. And even with this greater workload, the centers conducted analytic studies on 51% of foodborne and point source norovirus investigations, which was nearly 13% more than in year 3. Food core centers use their resources to make changes in their systems to determine what works best and then share these lessons with public health agencies across the country. Building on their strong programs, food core centers work together to develop model practices for outbreak response. They do this so that others can learn from their experiences and replicate what has worked best. There's a lot of variability in the centers that are part of the food core program, so if something works well across all of them, it's likely that it will work well in other health departments too. The food core centers have completed 3 model practices so far on initial case interviewing, laboratory practices, and student interview teams, and more are being drafted. Topics are chosen for the model practices if they work well across all of the different centers, despite their varying size, burden, and structure. So the first model practice that was written was on initial case interviewing. This document lays out the important information that should be collected during the first interview, such as exposure information, that can be used for hypothesis generation and analysis. This is also an opportunity to learn if the case works in high-risk settings, such as a food handler or in childcare, and to share prevention messages. This model practice includes information on identifying the case, the timing of an interview, and the content of the interview. And as all the model practices have, there is a checklist and other resources at the end of the document that help a health department through implementing the described practices. The next model practice is on laboratory practices, which are very important for finding cases and for guiding investigations based on the identified pathogen. And laboratorians are also able to do trend analysis to identify otherwise unrecognized clusters and outbreaks. This model practice guides a health department through isolate and specimen receipt, testing, and reporting to investigation partners. The most recently written model practice describes food core centers' work with student teams. Student teams are mutually beneficial to the health department and the students. The health departments have, by having a student team, have more time for their health department staff to do other tasks, and the students receive valuable field experience. Some areas have been using student teams for a long time, but there isn't a lot of published literature on them, so this was a very important model practice for us to get out, and it talks about how to establish a team, how to train a team, maintaining the team, and evaluating. The next model practice is currently being drafted, and it's on the benefits of having a strong multidisciplinary team and the communication and collaboration before an outbreak happens. The model practice will talk about the team roles and responsibilities, the importance of bidirectional communication, how training can be beneficial to the team, and ways to evaluate the improvements that were made. So I've talked very quickly, and I think about a lot of different resources that we have, so I just want to leave this up for a second with the URL for the Food Core website, as well as some of the pages underneath that website that talk specifically about the areas that I've talked about. And I want to thank the Food Core centers and our partners. And then I have lots of time for questions.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Questions?
Hi, Kirsten from Association of Public Health Laboratories, Kirsten Larson. So for the first model practice, you talked about the initial case interviews. Mm-hmm. You said content was one of the pieces you were measuring. Can you say a little bit more about that? Is that suggesting sort of what you should include, or is that literally like some standard variables that are collected across sites?
It's not a standard form, I wouldn't say. It just tells you need to capture, or you really should capture demographic information. You should get some of these important questions answered. It's not really a form. It's more categories that you should have questions.
Okay. I was just going to, so the follow-up question is there mm-hmm. any thought given to standardized variables across food court sites? Because we know the Listeria initiative is mm-hmm. is quite successful, and we haven't quite gotten there with any of the other pathogens yet. So
I don't think that's anything we'll, on the CDC side, tell the food court centers that they should have the same questions. That's the food court program in general is set up as we give the states money and they figure out what works best. They're kind of test kitchens and they know how their systems work and what will probably work best. So we try to be, I don't really want to say hands off, but give guidance rather than, you know, being heavy handed. So I don't think that's ever something we would do, but I think a lot of them do use similar questionnaires even as it is. And that we are thinking in the coming years we're probably going to be updating that model practice to include questions that are coming up with CIDT positives and stuff like that. So that one will probably be revised pretty soon.
Other questions for Elizabeth? Okay, thank you.